Welcome to Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I am Pamela Spoda, poet and host.
In my heart, in my brain, on my tongue, behind my teeth. Behind my eyes, on my tongue, under my skin, in my heart. In my veins, under my skin, behind my teeth, on my tongue, on my tongue.
We are broadcasting from KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain. We will host a monthly poetry show the very last Saturday of the month at 10 p.m. So here we go. I'm really excited to have five of my fantastically creative writing students here in the studio with me. And we have a full studio because there's the engineer, Doug Bennett, and then I'm the host, Pamela, and then we have my five students from Shasta College. I'm going to tell you their names and a little bit about the format that we're going to follow. And after I introduce each person, I will then say a little bit more about each individual student as he or she reads. So first up, we have Ethan Davis, and then we're going to have Tangerine Wilkin, Gray Grokey, Justin Immel, and last but not least, Tarid Miller. And I have been working with these students, all the students in my class, the entire semester. We only have about 2 weeks left. And these five students are, the whole class is truly wonderful. And these five students are just exceptional. And some are English majors, some are not. And some are working on books and other writing projects. Some are gamers, some are English majors. I mean, we just have a real variety here. So first up is going to be Ethan Davis. He happens to be an English major, and also he's a veteran. So, Ethan, can you tell us anything else about just one thing or two things about yourself?
Two things about myself. I guess the first would be that I'm in love with Redding, California. Not a lot of my peers could say the same, but I actually do love this town. I love the nature around it, and I love living here.
And you go out on camping or hiking trips, is that right?
Yeah, I just returned from a trip to the Trinities. It's probably the most beautiful place I've ever been. I would totally recommend it to anyone.
So are you going to read poetry or something else to start with?
This will be poetry.
And are you going to read one piece or two pieces?
We're going to start with two.
Okay, good.
The first is called A Stitch. A stitch, patched up with string that holds beneath a beating thing. That falls and breaks in love and shakes with fear for what's above. But more than that is what the beating makes by being beating. And who should sew with life and death? And who should make one stronger? Who then should match two pieces there, but leave the first one longer? And stitch them strong with leather lace and place them in the beating place. To beat and beat till one is worn and tenderly repair. All the shredded fabric that the beating beat up there. And back and forth with beats and ringing, to and fro with stitches stringing, humbly the seamster singing, keep the beating things beat beating. But when the beats subside forever, he alone will cut the tether and take the beating thing of leather for one more stitch to bear. Gilded wings affixed with silk and filled with honey-flavored milk to beat another kind of beat, and finally to fall asleep, but stand and wake up there.
I haven't heard that, Ethan.
That's a new one. This wasn't something I turned into class or anything.
You have some lovely images in there.
Honey-flavored milk. That's actually a biblical reference. That's supposedly the greatest tasting thing in the world. That's what we're given as sustenance in heaven.
Okay. And so next, what do we have? What poem do we have?
The following poem is, I guess, sort of it's my honor to Poe. And this is sort of, I kind of stole this from him. This is his meter, but this is called The Monster. When night draws near, I get a feeling, creaking steps and stomach reeling, shadows crawl across the ceiling, darkness all around. What was that, I whisper, blinking, watching for a creature slinking. Quietly, I shudder, thinking, just don't make a sound. Then the monster roars like thunder. I begin to shriek with wonder. Now I recognize my blunder staring at me from the ground. It's my roommate's basset hound.
That's very nice and clever as well. And you're right, Poe has this, he is the genius of monster kind of whore.
He is. His meters and his rhymes kind of make you sick.
It works on all levels, I see. Okay, well, thank you. And we're gonna hear more from you. But next, we're going to go to Tangerine Wilkin. And Tangerine is also a performance artist. And what I want to point out here is that each of these students has a different voice, obviously, distinctly different. But it's all really wonderful, the different voices. So, Tangerine, could you tell us one or two things about yourself?
For one, I'm a single mom.
Whoa.
So my daughter's about to be a year old, so life is rough, but wonderful.
What is your daughter's name again?
Symphony.
Symphony. So Tangerine and Symphony. I like it. Okay, so what do you have for us?
It's called Caffeine Fall. It's some slam poetry. Caffeine flows through my veins like a river in turmoil, crashing, streaming, tumbling, turning around every corner, every orifice, every shout in the dark with no answer, the adrenaline pulses, screaming through my body without speed or sound, heart beating uselessly, cage chained, clipped, carried, courageous, despite flightlessness that grounds me indefinitely, holds me indubitably, keeps me unquestionably, I am hostage to it, I fall. From my highest perch, the sun-molested sky, I fall down, down, down to gray-stricken seas, to mountains, to meadows, to grasses, to earth, to broken bones in a flightless existence I break. My spirit, my soul, my heart, and my home, I have fallen too far beneath rain-driven clouds, too heartless to pity, too narcissistic to care. About my poor broken wings, my agonizing screams, the water that flows from my eyes, I am fallen. To the poor meager earth, so eager to give, so eager to please, so ready for me to join the land of ground dwellers, all fallen, all broken, all heartfelt entrapped, lining the green grass with smiles and tears, anger and worry, emotions they spill, and now I feel. Where once I felt nothing, saw everything, knew nothing, I am born bloody and screaming and heartfelt, unsure of anything, I cry into the sea and am swept away by the sounds, the smells, the touch, the taste of the very air I now breathe grounded, has a whole new meaning, no longer pain, sorrow, lifeless and gray, but of birth and breath. Where once I was cold and calculating in stone, I am warmth, emotion, bleeding and raw, but reborn, I am whole. No longer fragments and thoughts, spinning stories of friends, lovers, the destroyed, the weak, and the useless, but of me, my stories, my family, my lovers. I am no longer destroyed, weak, and useless, but solid and strong. I will not compromise myself for a false sense of freedom, for petty wings, for a liar's theory. I will hold on to my broken wings, reminders of my fall back to reality, back to dreaming, back to the mold from which I came, my fall from stone to flesh, from perfect to flawed, from hopeless to hopeful, I am healed. By broken bones, by bloody wings, by all things real and imagined, I will live alive and grounded and free, no cages to keep me in golden bars of senseless superiority and detrimental deviance in coffins of carelessness in heartache. I will push past all boundaries and fences, breaking limits and constraints, leaving behind the solitude of the untouchable, the immortal, the flawless, the lies, to be honest, to be breakable, fragile and flawed, to be loved and to be loving, and know that in everything I know nothing, and in nothing there is everything, possibilities endless, overflowing, infinite.
Oh, tell me the name, the title of that poem again, please.
It's called Caffeine Fall. I wrote it when I was in a coffee shop. I had a lot of caffeine.
And so do you want to say anything about that poem at all? Because at the end, I mean, it's really high energy. And you're saying, I am healed. I am free.
Yeah, it was kind of some personal going throughs. I was really down for a long time, and it was kind of my will to keep going no matter what.
Cool. Are you reading another one for us?
I'm going to do one more.
Oh, good.
It's called Wasted Cuts. You haven't heard this one yet.
Oh. Okay.
I am wasted. On charcoal, on graphite, on pen and paper, hurling words, letters, sounds, nouns, adjectives, flying, biting, laughing at me, possessed. My hands scribble, scratches, itches, aches with the petrified stories of families, lovers, the destroyed, the weak, and the useless. I am haunted, I don't know. Just where my stories lie in the realm of truth, where my heart screams so silently against cold brick walls holding nothing, I am fine. I say without confidence, without conviction, with a timid voice and reluctant step, for I lie. With every breath, every voice, every mistake and step, every fall, I fall headfirst into blackness, my scream resounding, my heart pounding, and not a soul listening. Am I so lost? Am I hopeless, outdated, broken, not worth it? I force my eyes open to sunsets, to starlight, to lovers holding hands, to friendships and hardship and moving on past, to the possibility that we all lie, we all break, but we do not fall. For to fall is to surrender, and I will fight, pen in hand, gouging hopelessness with charcoal, with graphite, with pen and paper, hurling words, letters, sounds, nouns, adjectives, flying, biting, laughing at death. I cut only with words and cry only with periods, because the period signifies the end. The end of a story, a lifetime, a friendship, relationship, really anything at all, the end, is what we tell ourselves we want when in our minds there is only morphine-dripped words, tender heartache, and the knowledge that we are truly alone, but we lie. Somewhere there is someone watching. Watching for the absent smile, the pale scars, the empty eyes, the blood dripping, dripping from your heartache, your depression, your bipolar, your mania, your cuts, but someone is there. Someone is always there.
Thank you. So the title of that was Wasted or Is Wasted Cuts?
Yes.
Do you want to say anything about that title or anything about the poem?
I guess I like to make powerful poetry, or I want it to hit some people and open their eyes to something that maybe they didn't see before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's true. And your poetry and your words certainly do that. Thank you, Tangerine. Next up is Gray, whose last name I mispronounced, and it's Grokey, right?
Yeah, Grokey.
I said it right this time.
Yep.
I practiced. and Gray, could you, I'm thinking about some wonderful short stories that you've read in class, too. Could you tell us one or two things about yourself?
About myself or the short stories in particular?
Either one, about yourself, about your writing, life.
Well, I can't come up with anything off the top of my head about short stories. So I was thinking earlier, short things to say about myself. I'm from Red Bluff. I like to go hiking there, too. Just the other day, I was out camping up on 36 on, was it Hogs Lake Trail, I think, out there. Uh-huh. It was nice and pretty out there. It was a good place to write and come up with ideas for things.
And I think that's interesting for me, where people go to write. And I do think nature certainly is one of those places that lends itself. It's a kind of different connection to be out there. So that's a cool name of a trail too. Hogs Trail?
Hogs Lake Trail, yeah.
Hogs Lake Trail. Okay, so what do you have for us right now?
I've got four different little works, and I'll start with the first one right here. It's called The Red-Eyed Wraith. He comes at night, he calls, his drops and tears, they tear and fall. I see him as unseen, and never ere he wants, he presses close, as light he chokes and daunts. I call unheard and freeze and flush, I swim dry, and yet no eye can see his touch, as he freely runs on feet he doesn't own, and only I now he can know. I struggle not, I hear him not, nor do I stop to speak. I cannot deny his grasp or face, no, I don't retreat. I cannot escape my fear of these eyes. None can in truth, but all must try. But he may leave, and he may not, and I may within, without, hear not, or take the past that less find or seek, and travel with what's left of me.
Wow. And that's called, what is that called again?
The Red-Eyed Wraith.
Ah. So can you tell us anything about that? What motivated you to write that, or what, a little bit about it, or?
Actually, part of that came from my friend and I talking out at night, and we talked about the idea of just eyes being seen out in the dark from a distance, and we had been talking about little phobias, and so that kind of started this.
Uh-huh. When you first read the title, I thought you said The Red Race, but it's not that. Okay, so what do you have next?
The next is a piece called Art with Quotation Marks. When I ask why it's just a picture of land, you tell me I don't understand. You say I haven't studied the fine art, so I could never understand something with so much heart. I say, you don't know what gives something such meaning. You don't even know how to properly convey a feeling. The circle you drew is really black, so I'm supposed to assume you feel like an empty sack. And from this rhombus, I might guess you're mad, sad, or glad. But if I knew why, wouldn't that just be rad? And for the piece coming up next, you need to read about six damn pages of context. You know what they call an author whose books take 6 years to know the lore? They call him bad. If you can't draw something a little more aesthetic, then make your attempt to say something a little less pathetic.
Oh, so do you want to comment on that? And in fact, anybody in this room can comment on that if you like. Or not.
So, modern art is garbage.
And that was Justin, by the way. So go ahead, Gray.
The only thing I'd really like to say is my main problem with modern art is not necessarily what I find often people say it's about conveying a lot of feeling, when often I find it conveys little. And that's not about all modern art, of course, in general. It's just for a lot of what I see. Not everything, of course, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I clarify something?
The style called modern art is garbage. The rest of it is fine. It's the people that draw a black square on a white background and say that means something. That's garbage.
Well, it could mean something to that person, though.
Yeah, but don't put it in a museum.
So Gray, are you going to read more now, or are you going to wait, or are we going to read another piece?
Oh yeah, I have more to read.
Okay.
These next two pieces are actually these next two pieces aren't mine. They're a friend gave them to me. They're pieces from a sort of story he's writing right now, very high fantasy, and they're poems from it. Or actually, one's a poem, and the other is a burial prayer. And the first piece here is a poem. There's just some terminology of all fantasy. You'll understand.
Okay.
I'll just start right here. And it's called Ariadne. Under Goam, north of Dolan, where the mountains call White City, where all Ariadne is sleeping, working hard, keeping mountains sturdy, Ariadne. Let's go dance along that crater till we shake the snow from morning and expose a field of silver. And these goddamn hills been hiding, Ariadne. Then with tons, pounds, or ounces, we'll have the girls there calling and old mountains weeping. They will look to your grace dreaming, Ariadne. On and on we'll cry till morning. Far too long have you been waiting. Far too long under the bedrock. Let's go find whatever you've been wanting. Ariadne, if you walk this night beside me, I will sing your world your story. I will pay in more than money, Ariadne, not by pennies, dimes, nor quarters, but with happy sons and daughters, and they'll sing around this valley, Ariadne.
Do you want to say something more about it, or do you want to read the next piece?
I think I'll just walk into the next piece.
Okay.
The next piece, like I said before, is a burial prayer called the Norfolk Burial Prayer. The up top, he has a little... it's written in the native language, but I'm just going to read the translation. I'll start here. Lo, here do I see my father and his sisters and his brothers and his parents who had gone before them. Lo, here do I see my mother and her sisters and her brothers and her parents who had gone before them. Lo, here do I see my kin and their line that stretches back to the first and to the beginning. Here do they bid me come into the mist, into the sea, and into the mountain. I am come to the end of my time and to my first breath of forever.
Thank you. I do have a question. So that is a burial prayer, and it's lovely. I'm just curious why you selected, out of all the pieces you could select, why you selected that? Because it resonates with you in some way? Because you like the theme? What pulled you to that? Or did your friend say, here?
He had several pieces. He said, oh, you should read just a few of these. And I picked up that one because it, not all of his pieces were from his fantasy work. That fantasy just draws me in. There's a lot of, we were talking about artwork earlier, a lot of fantasy artwork is my favorite type of things. Often surreal type things too, like Salvador Dali, that sort of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I'm just very appealed to the, drawn into fantasy, I guess.
Good, good. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Gray. Next we have Justin Immel, and Justin is also a storyteller, and he's told us numerous stories in class, and outspoken. So, Justin, what else would you like to say about yourself, or nothing?
The standard measuring system is actually mathematically superior to the metric system. It's in pounds, it's base 16, and in distance, it's base 12. So it's more likely to divide into even numbers in the metric system, which is only divisible by 2 and 5.
Thank you for that information, by golly.
You're welcome.
So what do you have for us? What's first up?
The first poem I have is very deep into, like, it's a good point to catch where a whole lot of my life comes from. And I'll read it and then let you figure out what that means.
Okay.
The gap, depressing. Target, sad. No hope, no luck, that's it. A quest unending, hair left bare. No finds today, I quit. No, not one balaclava or fez, each and all a size too small. No nonla, knit cap, or flat cap, they barely fit at all. Imagine now, it's not that hard, a normal baseball cap. Now force it on a melon vast, of size enough to map. A laugh or two always ensue, they end in disbelief. A man cannot suffer such woes, I do, without relief. So wear your hats and caps, you jerks, ignorant of your gift. I'll stick to boring beanies and leave the rest to thrift. I have a really big head and hats don't fit me. And it's been a point of pain my entire life.
And as you were reading that, Tangerine and Tarid were laughing and smiling. And so, yes. So your head's too big?
Yeah. When I was in boot camp, there was 86 people sitting in a room together. And someone noticed that I had a big head. And it really was like a revelation. He was like, literally, damn, your head's huge. And then I became the center of everyone's attention for the next rest of my life. And we ended up doing a measurement. And I was the second largest head in the entire platoon, except for one guy who was 2.5 feet taller than me. So he was proportioned and I was not.
So this is a good thing for a Marine. A big head. Dope.
In the sense that I can hit things with it and it is less likely to hurt me than yes.
Thank you. I'm kidding with you. That is a very funny story and a funny poem. And thank you. So what's next?
The next one is called Suspended Disbelief. It is a quintain, which I looked up online and I cheated. The last one is actually one word because it's written as one word, even though it doesn't sound like one. Anyway, it's real small. Hipster, a douche, flips his hair, punch his dumb face, lameass.com. And that was just me experimenting with that style. I kind of like it.
So can you read that again? Everybody's laughing and I'm going, can you read that again?
it's called, again, it's a quintain. It's yes. Five lines. It's one word, two word, three word, four word, then supposed to be one word again. Hipster, a douche, flips his hair, punch his dumb face, lameass.com.
Okay. Thank you.
And then I've one more because I write short stuff.
Okay. Well, that's not exactly true, though. You write long stuff. You wrote a ballad. Didn't that go on for a page or two?
It was two pages. And I've come to like the ballad format, and I'm halfway through another one, but it's not done. So.
And so what I've noticed, and well, everybody here, you in particular, have experimented with different forms because, and this is interesting because I write more free verse, and you have said that you like the structure. It's a challenge to write within certain structures. So you've been experimenting with iambic pentameter, with the ballad, with different forms, and you don't like iambic pentameter.
Yeah, I like the restrictions when I have to count syllables and things like that because I use words and sentences and phrases that I would have never normally used because I don't need to think up new ways to write stuff if I don't, you know, whatever. And I tried iambic pentameter a few times and I hate it because the really good stuff, that's the examples of iambic pentameter are Shakespeare. Everybody goes to Shakespeare, but that dude cheated. He used 9 syllables, he used 11 syllables, he made up words. So his stuff sounds really good because he didn't do it right. And iambic pentameter, it's great, but it's really hard to do without cheating.
It is hard. And before you read one more poem, I'd like to remind our listeners that this is KKRN Community Radio. This is Late Night Poetry Jam. I'm Pamela Spoto, and I'm sitting in the studio with 5 brilliant students. And the person reading right now is Justin Immel. Okay, back to you, Justin.
All right.
And you have one more that you're going to read right now, or
yeah,
or two, or
yeah, one more, okay. And it's called 3 Unrelated Haiku.
Okay.
And yeah, a glowing red light, a beat up car, red car turns right, a flash lights the night. Oh look, mail for me. Oh shit, it's the DMV. Oh, ticket. I see. Arizona man, please process this if you can. Go fuck yourself, sir.
Well,
I was told I could swear.
I didn't. I'm just kidding. No, this is late night poetry jam. So yes, yes. When appropriate, one can do that. And for those of for the audience or those people who don't know what a haiku is, it's three lines. It's usually 5, 7, 5 in terms of syllables for a total of how many? 17. And there's also usually a spiritual connection. So Justin was playing with that, with the form, which was very funny.
Yeah, haikus are actually pretty much my favorite type of poetry because I'm lazy and it's really easy to write a haiku. I mean, it takes like 5 minutes, and if it sucks, then you're just being deep. That's, you know, it's like, oh, what does this mean? Oh, I don't know. No, it means I was lazy and I was bored.
But I want to say something about that because the haiku masters would argue that point. They would say, in fact, in our book, Natalie Goldberg says that Basho was reported to have said, if you write 3 haikus in your lifetime, you are a master. But go ahead.
I must be a master then.
So are you reading one more or is that at this point?
Okay. I'll hand it off and come around for round 2 later.
Okay, good. So the only person who hasn't read yet is Tarid Miller. And so Tarid, would you like to tell us? Oh, before, I'd like you to tell us something about yourself, but I also want to say that you also draw. And so he will write poetry, but then he may have a drawing that goes along with that. And you're also writing a trilogy of trilogies, or 3, 3, and 3. You have like 9 ideas for 9 books, and you're working on some of those.
Yeah, that's how I put it to be funny. It's just the trilogy of trilogies. I mean, you know, whatever.
And you have a deep voice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm getting over being sick. So.
Oh, I see.
It's a little off kilter. So yeah, I mean, I'm working on some books. I've been working on these since I was like 15. Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot of invested time and effort. I almost didn't graduate high school just because I was
because you're busy writing books.
So focused. I was like, oh look, AP microeconomics. Psh, no, whatever. It's like I got a novel to write. Screw that. So yeah.
Okay. So what do you have for us?
Well, because I like to be different, I mm-hmm. guess. I decided I'd start off with just like a tiny little excerpt from my books.
Okay.
If that's cool.
That's cool with
awesome.
Me.
Awesome. So this is, these all take place in like Greek mythology. And this is from the second book. It's from a chapter called Prisoner. The mutilation in his chest had healed. She had taken the thread out days ago, a scar showing the symbol carved into his skin and the agony his chest had gone through. Pandora had watched over him. As her father had requested, she had not left his side once in the few weeks that had passed. Though even had Hephaestus never requested such a thing, her love would have bound her here regardless. Even though the tears had ceased long ago, she still felt crushing sadness. Part of it was from the lie she had told him, the myth of how she had come to be. Some was from the knowledge that he did not know of her affection. Yet most of her dejection arose from his current state. How could she explain the truth if he was beyond hearing her? The only comfort to her was lying against his body as he slept. Her father had tried in vain to convince her that her depression was misguided. He had tried so hard to make her believe that Ventus would be all right. Yet every time she watched him repeat his nightmare, she believed it less and less. Each vision of Morpheus dragging him into darkness made her gasp, and every time he smashed into the ground, she winced. She had watched it happen hundreds of times, each look her eyes took to his. So many times he had fallen, so many times he had pleaded for her to wake him. Seeing Ventus so defenseless, so in need, had caused anger to rise in her. There was some solace in knowing that Zeus still remained oblivious. Apollo's actions, his sacrifice, had been once intelligent in design. He had hid Ventus in the one place that the father of the gods could not see, right under his nose. His vision saw all that went on in the world, yet was blind to the very mountain he had called home. Pandora had heard through her father that Zeus was preparing for war, was afraid of Ventus. "Are you all right, my child?" Hephaestus asked. She lifted her head to look at her father over Ventus's body, anger echoing in her gaze. No, I cannot be at peace while Ventus suffers. She lay back down, staring up at his sleeping face, her eyes full of worry. Her father hobbled towards her, sitting upon the stool she had long ago abandoned. Her hand moved, resting along Ventus's chin as her finger slid down his cheek. Her touch was delicate, gentle. "Talk to me, Pandora. I can see anger and worry replacing your sadness." Pandora closed her eyes, pressing her body against Ventus as she rested her head against his shoulder, indulging in the feeling she had and the touch of his body. She spoke. "He doesn't know. I love him, and he can't even remember the affection I have. In truth, it hurts me. It hurts so much, knowing what he has been through, and he doesn't even feel loved. It's not his fault.
but I still feel hurt. She opened her eyes, watching her own hand moved over his chest as she continued, "His body feels so familiar, but his mind does not. He feels so cold, and I can feel him falling further away, falling further. When he wakes, Father, he won't love me back." Pandora could feel tears spilling down her face. "My daughter, love is never gone. You must show him you love him. Give him your affection, and you open yourself to receiving the same. Tell him the truth and make him remember the love you want him to feel. It would do no good. His heart, however torn or ruined, still belongs to someone else. It would be wrong of me to test that love, to pull at the strings of his heart. He loved you first." So that's it.
Thank you, Tarid. Yeah. Do you want to tell us where that fits in your trilogy or how that
basically
in the storyline?
Without trying to get too complicated. In the second book, the main character, because of stuff that happened in the first book, ends up going into like a coma and is taken care of by Pandora from mythology. And she basically like falls in love with him and is like, "Oh, by the way, you loved me a long time ago, even though you don't remember it." And it just gets completely confusing because it's all about like Carl Jung's idea of the shadow and then multiple personality disorder and all that kind of stuff. So it gets confusing.
I just want to ask you one more question about that. So for your books, do you, for example, when I write poetry, I may read something that's happened and it sticks with me or it's an image in my mind and I start writing about it. So do you, in terms of this, the themes that you're working with, do you just create that out of your imagination? Do you use anything from your life?
Well, I mean, yes and no. A lot of the initial stuff I create out of like my own imagination. Like I'll have like a whole roadmap just to go straight from finish to end. But then as you kind of start writing it and you just get into the flow of using feeling rather than logic, you kind of start to unearth a lot of things that like in your life or that you feel about a certain thing that you didn't even know existed. And it just comes out that way. And usually it works out pretty good. So,
did you have another piece you were going to read to us before we move on?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
This is actually poetry. So,
okay.
Yeah. So this is called Competition because I recently entered a writing competition.
Oh.
I was going to like make this like my final presentation rap for creative writing, but I'm not going to rap it because, I don't do that.
You don't rap?
No.
Ever?
No.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, it's very lyrical. It's called Competition. So
okay.
don't count me out yet. I'm a rising star. Unnoticed by the vets, I've come way too far. To fade to obscurity, to be forgotten, in the texts of history is one of the rotten. Attempts at success, because that'd be a joke. See, I know me best, but you think I'll choke. So stupid and foolish to think you know me at all. You really that selfish to think I'm ready to fall? So take a second before you run your mouth. Just take a second so you can ask yourself, are you really the best? Is there no one better? I'll put you to the test. You're the prey. I'm the hunter. Ready for my pitches? Because here comes the heater. I'll leave you in stitches. Just call me a beater. See, you ain't got a chance. This is a one-sided fight. I leave nothing chance because writing's my life. Fool, I put words on paper since before you could crawl. Figured me out yet, loser? I think not at all. So let me take a moment to tell you how this goes down. You're way too petulant to deserve my crown. I'm a king with a pencil rolling over your crap. You're just filling in stencils. There's so much you lack. Immortality? Nah, I've already claimed it. You only got it in theory, because on you they'll just waste it. See, I'm walking roads of gold while you're crawling in dirt. See, I'm as solid as stone, but you're still getting hurt. I invented the wheel while you're playing with rocks. My words are rigid like steel, but yours fade with the clocks. Time ain't on your side, because I made it my bitch. Just go on, run and hide. You don't belong in my niche. I've put in more overtime than you, the 9-to-5-er. I've stayed up half the night, just to prove to the haters that I belong in this league, no longer in the minors, that I can be somebody who can play in the majors. So throw me a slider, I'll strike out every day, till pretty soon I learn and crush it into the bay. So throw me a curveball, chances are I'll just foul it, till it goes over the wall when I learn to control it. Want to toss me a sinker? I'm no stranger to bunting. On base I'm a runner, and I'm thinking of stealing. Just try throwing two-seam, I'll hit it out of the park. Switch it up to four-seam, your career will go dark. You've got your strengths, and I've got my weakness. I'll write to any length for even a chance to win it. You're probably better than me, had way more experience. It's sure to be challenging, but I'll keep my confidence. 'Cause all is fair in love and war. I'm stepping into the lair of fable and lore. I might be outmatched, have one foot in the grave. I might be outclassed, but at the end of the day, I'm pursuing my dream. I've got the soul of a writer, and it'll be so validating to call myself an author.
Nice, nice, very nice. That's a really a strong poem.
Yeah, I just was going, I mean, this is my first competition, so I was going into it like feeling like the underdog, like I'm already counted out.
So. And so it was about, you know, don't count me out. I'm here and this is, you know, this is what I'm doing. Yep. Good, good. We have some heavy equipment moving outside, I can hear, but maybe that's just going to give us some sound effects. Heavy. Okay. Thank you, Tarid. This is KKRN. This is Late Night Poetry Jam. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host, and I'm sitting here with five wonderfully talented students. We're going to go back to Ethan. You know a little bit about Ethan because he talked first. So, Ethan, what are you going to... Are you going to read the poem, that one poem in class about the man and the woman and the ending I like?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's it's what I consider, I guess, right now, since I only have a handful of poems written so far, my opus. It's my favorite. It was a blast to write, and it's something that I think everyone can relate to a little bit. Sort of the idea is that... a lot of poetry and a lot of art and a lot of music is about the good love, the love that, you know, that keeps you up at night and love that. But it's not all like that. sometimes you have relationships that don't go so well, and sometimes you've got relationships that are just sort of almost the opposite of love in every way. And so I think we've all had maybe one or at least of those.
Not
and so
me.
That's yeah. And so that's what this is. That's this
oh,
poem.
Oh, so this is that poem. Okay, this goody. Goody.
Scarlet's here, yelled someone, and the whole apartment scatters. The door lifts off its hinges, the coffee table shatters. The kitchen was a ghost town, the bedroom was a mess. Where people once were partying, they now were doing less. She overturned the love seat, and right below she found a party guest was hiding there. He made a sobbing sound. Her eyes were wide, her lips were pursed, she clicked her teeth together. Her sharpened nails had ripped apart the couch's supple leather. Her victim looked upon her, but all he saw was red, so Scarlet sauntered over and she pulled him upwards by his head. He said, wow, what a badass. He said, oh, what a doll. She shoved him hard against the peeling salmon-colored wall. She placed her knee inside the gap created by his thighs and leaned in close and gazed into his slowly tearing eyes. She asked him, am I pretty? He took a moment's pause. He thought it best to overlook a couple minor flaws. He said, darling, you're gorgeous. It should be against the law. She said, I don't believe you. So she broke his fucking jaw.
I love that poem. I don't know why I love that poem. I just love that poem. And it's got that, you know, that twist. I guess I like twisted stuff, too.
I think I do, too.
and the images of pulling him up by his head, you know, and putting him against the wall. And am I pretty?
Yeah, and it's not an untrue story. It's not a true story, but it's not an untrue story.
Oh,
it's got most of the details.
we're all looking at Ethan.
Yeah,
as
no,
he
I'm not going to say more than that.
Okay. Are you going to read us another piece?
Oh, sure.
Okay, good.
Sure. I've got let's see. So a friend of mine, a poet friend of mine, once told me that. The way that poetry works is that every poet or every poem should be named the world that we'd all die in. And I think that that's sort of true, but this is called The Plane That We All Die In. And I named this kind of post-poem. So it had its content and then it had its name because I just think it fit. And it goes, I slid the cabin door ajar. The captain screamed, get back. Between my teeth, a laced granola bar, my shoulders sought a parachuting pack. My body breached the airplane's door. I jumped and slid through windy thermals down. It's not a suicide, but metaphor. A really bitchin' way to hit the ground.
Well, you certainly have some funny pieces, don't you?
Yeah, and I'm not a very serious person, so that kind of comes out in my poetry, I guess, a little bit. And I do like the twist. I always like that, just that last line. If that doesn't get you, I think it's a waste of a poem. Mm-hmm. So, and because of that, because I kind of have this like antagonistic way of poetry and it just doesn't really sit well with you and it just kind of just makes you, it just doesn't feel like art and I don't mean it to be, you know, it's just kind of an expression of myself. This next poem, it's called 20-something Poet and it's something I wrote in response to, putting some of my real early poetry on internet forums and stuff and not getting really constructive criticism, getting more, I guess, comparisons to poets and children authors that are not regarded as very serious and not, which is fine, and I'm not very serious, but it was just sort of like I wasn't being taken seriously. So that's what this is. They call my poems drivel while they drivel to themselves. So I guess a poet's quality is based on what he sells. My rhymes tie up my lines and trip the tongues of all who hear me. I'm done when everyone that hears these freaky poems fears me. You sound like Lewis Carroll. Ronnie Dahl, I'll take it as an honor. The deadly poet's graveyard can consider me a goner. So plant my flesh and poems beneath a willow, where rats and roaches can't exhume the mess. The soggy earth will represent my pillow. The crows will be my loved ones, more or less. I came, I saw, I conquered. I'm done with all that sass. I'm kicking down the podium, and Keats can kiss my ass.
Nice, very nice. And that whole notion of planting flesh and poetry, yes. And this reminds me in some ways of Terrad's poem, I mean in terms of, and I'm not doing a comparison.
Oh, no.
No, only in the sense that, because the way that you prefaced your poem and the way you prefaced your poem, like entering a contest and people might count you out before you even got started, or people commenting, this is drivel while they're driveling. And so they're
right.
Both kind of like in response and they're strong. You
and
know,
it's
funny.
It's tough to put your stuff out there. It's tough to put out, you know, the stuff that you hold dear to you.
Yes,
you know,
most
half of my poetry will never see the light just because it's either too close to me or I don't think it's good enough. And that's, you know, that's just my own little insecurities or whatever. But yeah, and it's something we all face, I think, and just whatever we do, whatever we care about.
So you have one more?
I don't.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. I just didn't want to move on if you were going to read another poem. Okay, so Tangerine, what do you have for us this time?
I have three poems.
Oh, goody.
Okay, this one is called I Hate Those Magazines. I hate those magazines. You know, the ones they have at the checkout desk at the grocery line, pulling your eyes like a fish to a worm with tips for cooking, for dressing, for work, and for health. But have you ever opened one up and read the bullshit printed on the pages behind the cover? A waste of paper of dying trees to use such space for selfish needs, because why would I want a list of expectations? Telling me to be skinny, size 0 to 5. Bitch, I can be what I want to be. Maybe size 99. I'm size 11 and proud, so I don't feel the need to starve myself to please your hungry eyes. I hate those magazines. They tell me I'm disgusting if I don't shave every day, so why can men turn bears of men and still expect to get laid? We have to wear the right makeup, the right body, the right clothes. Oh, and don't have sex, or you're a hoe. But you better put out, or you're a prude, or maybe a nun, because nothing should be in his way when a man's trying to get some. And no is never no, stop is a playful tease, because why in the world should they listen to our needs? We learn to be ready for battle, to always be on edge, because you never know where the next attack might come from. From a friend, from a lover, from the future or the past, we've all learned none can be trusted. Isn't there something fucked up about that?
You really capture that bind, that catch 22, that, okay, you know, do it now. And if you do, then the person is labeled, as you said, a hoe. Or if you don't do it, well, what's wrong with you? You're just a prude. I mean, women often get caught. And I'm sure that men get caught in different kinds of situations. But
That was just a little response I was going through some of those magazines for collage material. Uh-huh, uh-huh. I like to do art and stuff. And I just, you know, reading it
is
horrible.
And I think that's wonderful. That's really wonderful. Okay.
Okay, the next one is called Once Upon a Time. Once upon a time, there was a child on a swing. There was more than a swing, a piece of rubber attached to rusty chains creaking against a concrete sky, but wings, rising you beyond snowflake clouds into the heavens, unknown and dying to be explored, a plane. A race car, hope and adventure in a world entirely your own. Nothing is impossible where horses are unicorns and dogs ask you how your day's gone. Nothing is limited when you can walk on the moon, racing across the stars. Time is just a clock that ticks, not a threat. In this life, you have forever, and death is a vague illness that happens to other people, no one you know. Each moment is of the utmost importance, and each new sunrise is a reset button, a new start for a new possibility. So when did the clock strike midnight? When did your youthful eyes become aware of so much poison seeping between humanity's cracked streets? When did you begin to notice the shadows beneath your father's eyes, the bruises on your mother's arms? What happened that you smelt the sour fume of alcohol, heard the malice beneath their tongues, saw life struck down so easily? What did you see that broke it open your world of trust and innocence? What corrupted you? Suddenly, your perfect lenses are cracked. Your parents, once sure of anything, are now cloudy and flawed, and you feel the tendrils of angry flames engulf your stomach, attacking your lungs and burning their way to your heart. You lash out at the people who raised you, and you're floundering to return to your naive state of mind. But once broken, you cannot be fixed. So you settle for the hardships. You are doomed to run, racing against hourglass, desperate to make it all worth something. Drugs, alcohol, one-night stands, reading, acting, watching TV, anything to escape for just a moment. To stop the roller coaster and just wait out the storm. But it always catches up to you, and by the end of it all, maybe I'll be whole again.
Thank you, Tangerine. What I've decided to do is not talk and just let us all read so that we don't run out of time. So you have another?
Okay, I have one more.
Okay, good.
Okay, it's called Time's Up. I am made up of faulty wiring, twisting and tracking beneath my porcelain skin, beneath the cracks screaming my self-abuse. Electric tears dribble and drip down my hard skin, lightning across the mist surrounding me and everything I know, a clicking in a locked chamber, ticking away, loudly that is my heart, held together by duct tape and stitches, super glue and safety pins. My wings lay abandoned on the side of the concrete road, broken and malfunctioning. My days of flight, of running away, are over, forgotten, in the desperate attempt to hold myself together, independent of another's hand. Just another booby trap of life's vindictive whims. I breathe deeply through my fiberglass esophagus, inhaling the poisoned air of my freedom, but somehow I do not feel any different. No remorse, no regret, no heartbreak. Just an empty void, a black hole hoarding all my emotions. Drained, I walk alongside speeding cars, mentally daring myself to step out, but my feet remain on track. If I could just freeze time and let myself break down, then maybe I'd be okay. I wouldn't feel quite so haunted by all my faults, my flaws, my mistakes, the forgiveness I gave, the times my trust was misplaced. The timer goes off and the world starts again, revealing me, whole, happy, and unchanged, singing loudly against the roaring of speeding cars' feet, firmly tracking the road's shoulder. Time's up.
Thank you, Tangerine. Thank you very much. And we're going to move on to Gray. Grokey.
All right. This poem here is, then these next two are free verse, and they're both about animals, actually.
Oh.
First one is A White Bear. And before her appeared a bear, its entirety the color of fresh fallen snow. Drawn she was in with her fascination of the creature. "From where do you come, bear?" she uttered entranced. And the bear spoke as plain as a man. "I come on the north wind, over the sun and under the moon, where lies my little green patch in the midst of the gloomy thick wood." She stood without will and held the bear, and he spoke again. "Be you afraid, my girl?" No, she wasn't. "Well, mind and hold tight as we ride this long, long way over the sun and under the moon and into the gloomy thick wood. On I rode through the castles in the sky and clouds in the sea, but there was no way to that place." She prayed and searched with many peoples in her travels, and always she danced, yet ever it was that they did not reach that place. The days moved with greater breadth and speed as each passed, and she saw the white bear later and later and less and less. She married a man who spoke of a creature on the east wind, a notion she found obviously silly. Her sons and daughters appeared and grew and laughed, and often they thought little they spoke about that great big white bear who rode under the sun and over the moon. And she still knew him. She wept till she was tired in thoughts of him. "I must go, I must go, I must go under the sun and over the moon." "But the way to the place is arduous and terrible," the bear would have said. And she would reply, as so often she did, "Stay here then, but tell me the way, and I shall research it out." She set out on her way that seemed paved and brisk and filled,
Many, many days she walked, but the bear was gone. He must be gone. He had been gone. Her children, they talked, and grandkids, they laughed. And as she looked around them, her face curled high into a smile. She slowly laid down on a little green patch in the midst of the gloomy thick wood.
Thank you. And one more?
Yeah, this one is labeled Sheep. It is titled Sheep. The lush hills rolled lazily like the backs of waves far out at ocean, not breaking down into the choppy crests we see at shore, only rolling calmly up and down. On those steady slopes was a great number of fluffy white sheep. They flowed along with the current of those grassy waves that bobbed across that verdant valley, coming up and over each little hill. They kept their heads down to the ground as they fed from the juicy jade blades of grass that sprung up among them. They munched hungrily, chewing up the vegetation with delight. They had not a care in the world, those sheep. But then the sun slipped sleepily down over the valley, hiding somewhere far over behind that bend. The sheep's eyes widened with terror. No milky white moon lit the way this night. Their light had left them, and now darkness drank them in. A horrendous howl echoed through the air, soon followed by beastly barks. The canines came. Wicked wolves with white teeth wolfed down a morbid morsel of sheep that night, and raced away before the light. Saddened and shamed, that morning the sheep snuck off to find a shepherd. They found a man with a mighty musk and made him their caretaker. That twilight, two thin-witted twin wolves came to snatch a snack. Instead, they received a firm smack from the end of a staff. That morning, the sheep awoke happy. They bleated and blessed their new shepherd, and even let him take some of their wool. The sheep lived happily with that man for quite some time. At night, they cuddled cozy next to one another without a worry. And at day, they ate huge heapings of hay. The shepherd worked hard to keep the sheep safe. He crafted a cane to pull sheep to safety. Then he finished a fence to keep the wolves far away. The sheep seemed happy here, until one or two disappeared. The sheep whose wretched wool wouldn't weave would be whisked away. And the sheep now realize that their fence kept them locked in. For them, they realize the sad truth too late, that shepherds farm sheep.
Oh, that is a twist, too. I really like that line, to snatch a snack. Thank you. And this is KKRN Community Radio. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam. And I'm in the studio with five of my brilliant students. And next up is Justin Immel.
Hello again.
Hello.
Good night. Evening, because it's nighttime. So I've got three left, and I'm going to make them quick, I guess.
Okay.
The first one's called Rhyming is Easy, and you'll see why. Bees, breeze, fleas, fees, and ease. Keys, trees, squeeze, please, and tease. Knees, these, sees, freeze, and wheeze. Chinese and Cantonese. Japanese, seven seas, overseas, and unease. Retirees with CDs. Trapeze, Maltese, agrees. GOPs, deportees, BBCs, expertise. Tennessee's, parolees, Napolese, nominees. Returnees and draftees, the manatee for C's. Attendees with STDs. I'm great, so suck on these.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Justin.
I felt bad about that one, kind of, until I heard his, and then now I feel better about it.
Okay.
The next one's called High Combo. It is a series of, I forgot how many haikus. Yeah,
a series nine. Of nine haikus.
Nine haikus. Along Ale Alley, bar crawl brawls between bullies. Cops come corralling down the drunken drive. Every escapade ends. Fools flung fast in fits. Guile gone from grouches. Horrid howlers hawking hate. Ignored with intent. Justice justified. Kings of kind know no kindness. Life lost to languish. Most men have morals. Not needed in the nick. Obliterated. Penance paid poorly. Quibbled quarrels never quit. Rehab is required. Seclusion soon stops. Transit to the terminal. Upbeat, unsuppressed. Vivacious vibrance. Whiskey whirled about wildly. Zarek under Zeiss. Yells yield to yelping. Zapped, zoned, zombified, and zilched. Arrested again. Okay. This one would probably be my most serious, and it's called Lament. A hero forged in battle flame, his righteous heart is pounding. He knows his cause is justified, his bestial roar sounding. For foes he bears his shining steel, their curses never cease. A field of blood, a field of tears, a victory for peace. The people cheer, the day is won, awards acclaim and love. His songs of glory reach the sky, a gift from those above. This world is mine, it kneels to me, unshakable, supreme. No light, no sun, no sleep, no care, untouchable, a dream. Her mind is sharp, her legs are strong, this puzzle cannot last. With perfect placement plotted out, the danger fades too fast. Her foe is vast, the traps are lain, the bait is placed, it fails. No single movement out of place, the heroine prevails. The taste of freedom wets her lips, but suddenly is barred. Robotic will that drags her back, her wit in high regard. This world is mine, it kneels to me, unshakable, supreme. No light, no sun, no sleep, no care, untouchable, a dream. A flash of light, a clash of steel, a losing fight is won. Invading foe is pacified, the battle's just begun. For Earth they march with endless zeal, their hatred burning bright. Our meager forces cannot stand, but to the end we fight. A twist of fate, a flood of plague, alliance newly forged. United forces slow their foe, unceasing never gorged. This world is mine, it kneels to me, unshakable, supreme. No light, no sun, no sleep, no care, untouchable, a dream. A criminal of hazy past, the border marks the end. A step towards the headman's axe, no, and then stone fire descends. The dragons tear the world apart, their victims rent and torn. A shout of power rends the sky, all hail the dragonborn. The end forestalled in Sovngarde, a hero to his core. An arrow shot to his knee, adventure nevermore. This world is mine, it kneels to me, unshakable, supreme. No light, no sun, no care, sleep, no care, untouchable, a dream. Her howling madness fills the halls, they echo to sunrise. A boy too young to comprehend, a fate he does despise. Away he faces monsters tall, ones he never beats. At home he faces mother's fall, a cycle that repeats. Escape he seeks inside a box where heroes always win. No one can ever catch him there, adventure lies within. That world was mine, it knelt to me. Now I've calmed that sea. More light, more sun, more sleep, more care. Unbound and now I'm free.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you very much.
And that's a ballad.
So you've really covered the territory there in terms of form and structure. So we're going to finish up with Tarid. And I just want to thank all of you for being here today. You were just wonderful. So Tarid, why don't you go ahead and read one piece?
Wrote a piece about writer's block.
Oh,
and it's kind of two-sided. The longer version is like my view of writer's block, and then the shorter version is writer's block view of me. So, writer's block. So, I'm alone. Insanity is inching in as shadows start to feed. Shifting without sense, darkness. I don't want to know. Crosses over your line, craving, frozen, broken, losing the fight. I'm alone. My muses come not to my beck and call. Ideas fall from grace. Pray to me for guidance. Beg for mercy. Sickness from the writer's soul. To play king, if only for a day, not lie, this time like dogs on the floor. I'm alone. The story is on the page, its author's hand is lead, to fill the reservoirs with ink, thickness, as the bell tolls, breathes life to the words you'll see. They have their weights, they're numb until judgment. Had enough of being fed to the wolves, of betrayals that refuse to mend, cold as steel and hot as rage, shifted, redefining roles, you would still try to snuff flames, break bones, prove that I've got it all wrong. Had enough of no chance for compromise, of running away from the pain, knowing the story is incomplete. Gifted, filling in the holes. Tired of you being a sore winner. Always sick when you say there is no common ground. Had enough. Should have known you were like this. Just another familiar face that eludes memory. Ruthless, dead inside, frozen cold. I'll pull myself out of these trenches. Denied no more. Foolish of you to even try. This is it. The moment you've been fighting for. The victory I've been training for. This last battle will determine our fates. I'm sick of this. It's getting old. But I won't let my faults deify you. One last exchange, and now I've risen above, not fallen below. And then the flip side to that is writer's block view of me. So, I'm alone. Insanity is shadow without sense. I don't want to know your craving broken fight. I'm alone. Come not to my beck and call. Fall from grace. Beg for mercy from the writer's soul. To play king on the floor. I'm alone. The story is led to fill, as the bell tolls, life, you'll see, until judgment. Had enough of wolves that refuse steel and rage, redefining roles, you would still try to prove that I've got it all wrong. Had enough. No chance of running away from the incomplete, filling in the holes, tired of you being a sore winner, there is no common ground. Had enough. You were another familiar face, ruthless, dead inside. I'll pull myself no more, foolish to even try. This is it, the moment, the victory, this last battle. I'm sick of this. My faults deify you. One last exchange, and now I've fallen below.
Thank you, Tarid. So I want to thank Ethan Davis, Tangerine Wilkin, Greg Grokey, Justin Immel, and Tarid Miller for a fantastic experience of reading our creative work. Thank you. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of KKRN's Late Night Poetry Jam.